This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Good to have you company for another D Word Podcast. It's always good to hear from people who want to tell their story on the podcast. And this week my guest is Andy Woodhead, who received a dementia diagnosis in his 50s, but has certainly not let it stop him making a real contribution to research and advocacy, not only in his native Wales, but worldwide. Andy, a warm welcome to the D Word. Great to have you here as my guest. Plenty to talk about, especially what's been going on, the really positive things that have been going on in Wales. But, you know, before we get into that, can you just give us a brief story behind, you know, you yourself? You were diagnosed at the age of 55, weren't you?
I was. It was a very early diagnosis. I was actually being investigated for Parkinson's disease. So I hadn't even gone with any dementia symptoms. And I was taken into hospital, had a number of tests, probably more than most people would have or need, like MRIs and CT scans, and also a lumbar punch, simply because they were looking for Parkinson's. And it was a case of good news, bad news. I didn't have Parkinson's, but I had lesions on my brain, which suggested that I might be developing vascular dementia. My problem has really been, as with most people who have vascular dementia, TIAs, transient ischemic attacks, which are mini strokes, basically. I had one major stroke, which I recovered from, but subsequently I was having TIAs. I feel that it's something that I can do externally, if you like, without medication to help myself, i.e. exercise, a good diet. I've given up alcohol, not that I drank very much anyway, and I've never smoked. So, but they're all the ones that you've got to, and exercise is important. And obviously remaining in social environments is very important. And I say they're the sort of things that I do without taking drugs, but clearly I have to take things to control my blood pressure, which is vital. High blood pressure will cause a TIA, so I've got to remember to take the blood pressure medication. And also I'm a type 2 diabetic, so I have to remember to take my diabetic medication, because again, there is a risk factor with diabetes. I wouldn't want to overstate it, but it is recognized that it is one of the risk factors. I gave up work pretty shortly after that. I worked for a European, I was a director of a European multinational company, traveling all over Europe. So it was quite an onerous job. My background, I have a PhD. I worked up to a PhD in European law, I spent a lot of my life studying, as you can imagine, and I did two master's degrees after I graduated with a social science degree to start off with. So research and academia have really been a big part of my life as much as my job, which is why I am continuing with research now. I had four publications last year. One in palliative medicine, and I've just had another, which was good news last week. We've just had another in palliative medicine, another publication. It's become something that it's a new sort of interest of mine, palliative care, particularly for people with dementia, which I think is so often taken for granted and overlooked, and needs to be highlighted, which is why I really decided to take part in the first study, which was with King's College Hospital in London. We did a 5-year study on palliative care at home. I have to say the results weren't great. It was a study that was financed by the Cicely Saunders, or working with the Cicely Saunders Institute, and it was Marie Curie that financed the 5-year study. And as I say, we got a lot out of that in terms of the improvements that can be made. Things like dedicated phone lines for people who are receiving palliative care, because at the moment, all they have, if they have your carer has an emergency, is a telephone line where you get triaged, and then you talk to a nurse, and then you talk to a doctor, and the whole process can take a couple of hours. I wrote an article with a colleague from King's College asking if we could have a dedicated phone line for people who were receiving palliative care so that they went straight through to a doctor rather than having to be triaged and then evaluated by a nurse. If you're receiving palliative care, clearly everything that happens is going to be serious, so the triage stage is unnecessary. That was obviously quite interesting, and the latest study has been the issue of loneliness at the end of life, which will affect anyone who is receiving palliative care, even with a dozen people sat around them and people caring for them. Without the right sort of support, which could be spiritual or social, depending on the individual, but coming from the right people with the right advice, you can overcome those sorts of issues. So that's been equally interesting. I gave up work and was bored. So after 2 years of sort of doing what most people do post-diagnosis, there was no help then. When I was first diagnosed, there was no post-diagnostic counselling. So I had to come home really and do my own research, which was via Google. And anyone who researches on Google with any diagnosis, whether it's dementia or anything else, my advice would be don't Google, because Google always gives you the worst of scenarios. However, having said that, I know that everyone who is listening will someday get a diagnosis. Anyone to look it up on Google, so they will do that. But I think it's best to talk to your primary carer before you start Googling things. I had no choice when I did it. As I say, there was no counselling, which there is now, and it is vital because people don't understand. A dementia diagnosis is like any other diagnosis of a terminal illness. The only thing is, you don't get a prognosis because everybody with dementia is different. That's not because there are over 100 different types of dementia. It's simply because we're all different. We all live different lifestyles. And, I know someone with Alzheimer's who has had it for 20 years and is still writing dementia diaries. You can't. You can't give straight answers, if you like, to those questions. But I'm a great advocate, as I said at the beginning, of doing things to help ourselves, which is to do with lifestyle issues. And it's something that Wales, the NHS in Wales in particular, and England too, have been working on to try and get the information out there on the internet and in hard copy for specifically for carers so that they receive the right sorts of advice about how to deal with someone who's losing their appetite or isn't drinking, which are the sort of the worst stage scenarios, but you don't get there quickly, if you can take care of yourself before that, perhaps, which I think is it's vital information.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Some days you just want to amplify your everyday look. Like when you want the look of false lashes without the extra effort. Reach for Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Volumizer Mascara. Or when you want all eyes on your smile, keep Empower Gloss Ultra Glossy Lip Serum in your bag. It's a burst of 24-hour hydration that smooths like a serum, shines like a gloss, and can be worn sheer or layered. You'll always look and feel your best with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin, not against it. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, we've got over 40 shows covering every aspect of health, available for listen again and download from the website at ukhealthradio.com. On this edition, I'm chatting to dementia advocate and researcher Andy Woodhead. You know, there's a lot going on there, Andy, isn't there, involved in all that, and a lot going on in Wales as well. You've got the draft dementia strategy for Wales, 26 to 36. There's also a statistic I saw that Wales has the lowest rate of dementia diagnosis in the UK, just 56%, evidently.
Yeah, still the biggest killer of people. However, yes, and I've got no idea why that would be. And I don't think there's necessarily been any research. We'd be guessing, wouldn't we, if we did that? I've got my own ideas, but they're ideas about, you know, why that might be. I think we've got less heavy industry now. The coal mines have gone. We've got electronics and things like that. So I think pollution levels have changed, and I don't think they have helped us over the years in terms of dementia. But again, that's me talking from my own ideas. It's nothing to do. I couldn't say there's been any research that has justified that. Certainly the care in Wales has improved, but it's still unpaid carers that provide, I believe, 97% of the care that is given to people with dementia comes from the unpaid carer, which is usually the family. Yeah. And I make a number of keynote speeches for different charities and universities, and I always highlight the fact that the carers need as much attention as the person with dementia. If someone in your family is living with dementia, you're all living with dementia. As the journey progresses, I'm sure it must get more difficult for the carer. And of course, there are decisions to be made down the line, like, do I want to go into a care home? Do I want to stay in my own home? I think most people want to stay in their own homes for as long as possible. And what we really need is the facilities in the community to enable us to be able to do that and enable our carers to be able to cope with us in those later stages of dementia, because dementia is a journey. My cognitive abilities are still pretty good. My research, I find, is my brain training. So it's like word search or crosswords and things like that. I have always been someone who's read non-fiction rather than novels. So, you know, for me, it's something which has sort of come naturally. But all the other symptoms that go with dementia, which people don't necessarily recognize, they think it's only or mostly about memory. Which it isn't. I think I've broken more bones than a jockey through falls, and that's entirely due to the dementia. Received some really good specialist physiotherapy to help with that, which is to strengthen its lower body strength. If you can get your lower body strength improved, it does help with things like balance issues, because with me, it's not that I don't have the strength in my limbs. With me, it's the balance part of the brain. Also, it's frontal lobe, so frontal temporal lobe, I believe, and which is the sort of the social filter, executive planning, those sorts of things. For example, I can't cook a meal. I used to love to be able to do that. I can't, because I can't get things timed right. And, you know, when I should be putting water into a sauce, but I'm not. So I actually bought a slow cooker several years ago, thinking, well, that's going to make life easy. And we all went out as a family, expecting to come back to a nice warm meal. I forgot to switch the slow cooker on, so it was like someone had to start again. But I can talk from two perspectives, one having dementia and one having cared for someone with dementia. My mother, after my father died when my mum was quite young. Mum was 59 when my dad died. She had all sorts of health problems and was a heavy smoker, so I couldn't have her to live in the same house as me and the rest of the family. So I bought a house. I live in Ogmore by Sea, which is halfway between Swansea and Cardiff on the coast, and managed to buy a house that I could convert with a granny flat. So Mum came over for 2 weeks to see if she would like it. She came for the Wimbledon fortnight because tennis was her, sport of choice, tennis and snooker, really. And she never went back. Mum died, sadly, of COVID, late in the COVID pandemic, but she had been diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and she was a type 1 diabetic, so she had all sorts of sort of prerequisite conditions, which is what I try and tell. I teach medical students and AHPs, the allied health professions, which everything from physio to dietitians, really. I teach them that they're probably going to be treating somebody not for their dementia, but for a co illness. But they'll have dementia. It's statistically highly likely that they will. So I try and teach some of the do's and don'ts in terms of, caring for people with dementia, i.e., always smile, always give your name. We read faces in many things. Non-verbal communication becomes very, very important, and also not to approach people from behind if you can help it, simply because you will agitate them before you start. And I always say, sit on the bed and talk to them about something. Find out one thing about them that's been of interest. And I always get similar responses. We don't have time to do that. And I say, you do, because you're making more time for yourself, because the patient will become less agitated, and will give you less time running to the patient every time, they're screaming for help or something like that. So you're working smarter, not working harder. So, I try and do that, and that comes as part of my interest in patient-centered care. So it's not just for dementia patients, but other patients with other mental health conditions as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Some days call for some oomph to amplify your everyday look. Like when you want the look of false lashes without the extra effort. Reach for Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Volumizer Mascara. Or when you want all eyes on your smile, keep Empower Gloss Ultra Glossy Lip Serum in your bag. It's a burst of 24-hour hydration that smooths like a serum, shines like a gloss, and can be worn sheer or layered. You'll also look and feel your best with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin, not against it. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good. We've got plenty of great guests lined up, but there's always room for you to tell your story here on The D Word. Our email is tdwradio@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Someone who did just that is this week's guest, Andy Wooderhead. You know, what comes across from all of that, Andy, is that the real importance of lived experience. Now, you know, I can't remember right at the beginning when I was doing this show about 6-7 years ago. I got invited to a few meetings, Dementia Action Alliances, and I looked around the room, and I the first one I went, somebody said, anybody got any questions? I said, yeah, isn't there someone missing? And everybody looked at me, and I said, well, someone living with dementia. Surely we shouldn't be telling people living with dementia what they want. They should be telling us.
Yes, that's an argument I'm afraid that I have to have on numerous occasions, not just with research projects, but with some charities too, who think that consultation is the same as co-production, which it isn't. So, I mean, a questionnaire, that's co-production, they say. No, it's not. Co-production is a relationship of equals. So you've got your experts clinically and in care, but of equal importance, which, as you mentioned, is someone with lived experience. So you're in a relationship of equals. And I would say, if anything, the lived experience is sometimes more important, depending on the particular study. And I used to think that clinical studies were particularly studies that look for curative treatments or treatments to slow down a condition needn't involve people with dementia. It would be difficult. Lived experience would have no value. Well, I've changed my mind on that one. I seriously think that that's something they should have a voice in. And of course, there was the recent drug, wasn't there, which you could have, but you needed to pay for it, and you had to go for these scans on a regular basis. Now, sort of did a halfway house on that one. And I think it would probably have been better if it had been held back for a while, because it's given people false hope and only 2 months extra, which means a lot. I think if you get a voice that can be objective, because, I mean, I just want a cure. Give me a cure. Give me it now. I want it today. But if you can get an objective voice who understands, the different routes that are being taken. In Australia, they're looking at things like ultrasound to unblock the synapses, because it's basically protein buildups, isn't it, between synapses. And they're looking at ultrasound in Australia do that. So far, they've only done tests on laboratory rodents, but it's an interesting concept. And again, it's not a drug therapy as such, but it's tackling what the drugs are trying to tackle as well, because we need to clear the synapses with a lot of dementias. Alzheimer's is something which obviously is the most common one, which is something which is, I think, a little different. You will know, Pete, as well as me, there are over 100 different types of dementia, and to find the one magic pill that will work for all of them isn't possible. But I'm pleased to say that they're all being looked at, especially for younger people. I think it's very sad now to see how many footballers, rugby players, are developing dementia at a very early age through concussion that was ignored, really. They would play on, whereas now they are sent off. But we knew about concussion and its effects. Gosh, when I was a child, with boxers, they called it being punch drunk, but it wasn't. It was dementia caused through continuous concussion whilst playing the sport, which is why I think the helmets are pretty good, but they're not going to help much, because the problem is the brain bounces inside the skull, so you're bruising both ends. So I think we need to have a rethink in terms of sports. I know that for young people now, when they play rugby, they call it touch rugby, so that we haven't got children, you know, being tackled, hard tackled. And the football isn't what it used to be. It used to be leather, which when it got wet would weigh an absolute ton, whereas now it's a completely different story. So heading the ball isn't perhaps as big a problem as it used to be. But there are all sorts of things like that which need to be looked at carefully.
Yeah, I mean, that's a story we're following closely on the show. Actually, 1926 was the first time they identified what they called dementia pugilistica, which was associated with boxing. So, like you say, you know, that knowledge has been around for a very long time. I guess with all these things going on, you know, we've got great research going on and that kind of thing. But I've got to say, still at the other end of the scale, I'm being asked probably daily almost, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? So we've got this whole kind of public approach. Now, I know we've got, you know, a major story in a soap opera, EastEnders, which is trying to deal with it. But, you know, there's a lot of work to be done at that end, isn't there?
Yeah, I wrote an article, actually, about that particular storyline, which was for Dementia UK. And it was published in the subsequently published in the Daily Mirror and the Metro, and to talk about early onset dementia. And I did highlight the fact that there would have to be artistic license, which there always is whenever they've done it, for example, in other soaps, because they have a similar storyline in Coronation Street, don't they? Which is good publicity for the condition. However, they have to use artistic license and speed up the progress of the condition. So I wanted to make that clear in my article that, you know, that they will do that, and they have. The guy in EastEnders is now going into a home, and it progressed very quickly. And I don't think people should read anything into that. That isn't necessarily how the dementia will develop, particularly early onset dementia. And I know so many people with dementia who lead really, you know, better lives with the condition than they would have been able to, you know, many, many years ago. My grandmother, she died of, they called it, she died of old age, but she didn't. She was senile, which was dementia. So she had a form of dementia that they were unable to diagnose. I'm talking about 55 years ago that she died. And I've also lost two of my, that was my father's mother, two of my father's sisters had dementia as well. But there is no proof, as far as research goes, that it's necessarily hereditary. They haven't found a dementia gene yet. So, you know, that's good news. So not something that people need to concern themselves with. I just think it's a fact of nature that the brain will age like the body will age, but maybe in a different way. I know a lot of people now that obviously dementia is the umbrella term, isn't it? I think that's what you were alluding to, Pete, with everybody thinks Alzheimer's is dementia. It's not. That's the umbrella term. And there are quite a few people, I'm not one of them, who don't like the term dementia, simply because it comes from, I think it's Greek word, demented, isn't it? And they don't think it helps the stigma attached to dementia. And there is stigma. It's not, dare I say, the aggressive sort of stigma that was attached to things like leading a gay life years ago, when you would face violence. Dementia is far more subtle, I think. I think when you decide that you're going to tell people, particularly friends, that you have dementia, you see them a little less often, perhaps. It's that sort of thing. And also, dare I say, without the appropriate training, that can be something which you experience in a hospital as well, in a hospital environment. You know, some medics don't have the patience, or they will say the time to repeat themselves or explain things in a different way simply because someone has dementia and doesn't understand them. Well, you know, sadly, they have to. If they're going to do the job properly, that's something that they have to do. And I have no sympathy at all with those sorts of excuses. What I will say is the NHS was developed for us, and the words were from cradle to grave. And you have to be equally aware of curative treatments, as well as managing people who are terminal and coming towards the end of their lives. So I think that's something which is critical.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's a very good point to make at the end, because we are sadly running out of time. But in terms of dementia strategy, want to get you back on the show maybe in 6 months' time when that's kind of...
That would be great.
Yeah,
anytime.
Once a consultation's gone through and it's kind of stuck in there, it'd be really good to talk to you again about that, Andy. But for now, anyway, it's been fascinating, and thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you for having me on, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much to Andy. Fascinating to learn everything he's involved in and the good works that are taking place there in Wales. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
With its abundant natural beauty, charming towns, and friendly people, South Carolina offers the kind of discoveries that stay with you long after you've left. Like the realization you're good at something you never before tried. Or your first oyster roast, and a taste you didn't expect to love. And other times, it just hits. Like the view on a windswept Appalachian mountaintop. So come find the undiscovered you in South Carolina. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.